don't call me, I'll be gone. I'll be 900 miles away from home.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, now on Pantheon Podcast, which provides you with plenty of shows to choose from that fits your likings. Go on to Pantheon Podcast, check it out. You'll find something you love. And Jason's here too, and he can tell you that you'll find something you love because he finds something that he loves. I find something I love on Pantheon Podcast.
And something that you love, Brian, is me, right? And all our listeners. Sure. They love you.
You're the highlight reel.
Highlight reel. Find something you love. Well, of course they love our podcast. And thanks everybody too who listens every week, subscribes, downloads, follows us on social media. We're now on Threads, Brian. Instagram now has Threads, which is like Twitter, even though Twitter's now called X. Anyways, so we're now on the Thread. So follow us, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads. I think that's it. I think that covers it all. We don't have the TikToks yet, Brian.
Yeah, I saw that we're on there, but I haven't checked out Threads yet.
Is this
like the Facebook Shorts in like?
No, I think it's Mark Zuckerberg because it's a Facebook thing because Instagram is part of Facebook or whatever the hell that company is. It is a direct shot across the bow to Elon Musk and Twitter because it looks and feels very, very similar to Twitter. So usually what I do is when I post our podcast or whatever to Twitter, I'll copy and paste everything and I'll paste it in the Threads. And it works because Instagram, even though that's part of Threads, works very visually and audio, audio. Threads is Twitter.
So this is like the social media cage match between Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk?
Yes. You know what? You remember that old celebrity deathmatch TV show?
MTV? They never did it in a cage.
No, but I'm kind of hoping this is celebrity deathmatch. And it's what was the tagline? It was Freddy versus Jason. Remember that movie, Freddy versus Jason, came out in the early 2000s? The tagline was, whoever wins, we lose, or one of the taglines. And I kind of like that cage match between Elon and Zuckerberg. It's like whoever wins, we lose.
Well, would it be like the Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and Mankind? So who's throwing who off the top of the cage?
That's got to happen if it's a cage match, right? Like somebody's got to get chucked off the top of the cage. But I love and hate social media. I do enjoy interacting with the people that follow us, Brian, and like what we do and give us suggestions on artists or comment on the stuff we do. That is great. But there's a lot of nonsense that goes on out there that I try to stay out of. And I know you stay out of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Great for music stuff.
Yeah. It's some new stuff, following news, but I'm not on those
great
things.
Great for dog rescue stuff and music.
Yes. Exactly.
So let's go back to the that almost sounds like that should be a video game. Like the
cage match.
The Twitter Facebook cage match video game. So you'd have to have someone doing voiceovers on that.
You would have to have somebody doing voiceovers, you would have to have somebody doing the voice acting. You would have to have somebody doing the music for it, right?
And it would be heavy music, would it not?
If you're doing a fighting game, it would have to be heavy, whether it's heavy Southern rock or like industrial rock or maybe both.
Hey, guess what? We have a guest that might talk about some of that stuff.
Today on the podcast?
Yes.
Well, that's funny how that kind of works and ties into what we were talking about.
Hey, that you know, when we're just winging it, that's how it works.
That's how it works. We are such seasoned pros, Brian, that we can start out about talking one thing and work it back to our very fine guest this week, whom I call a Renaissance man in the entertainment industry. Would you agree?
I would agree. And he has your name, and he likes, like Jerry James Nichols, he has three names. You're talking Jason Charles Miller. And, you know, I didn't know much about him before, so it was great to have him on because I found out a bunch of stuff, and everyone's going to hear about that bunch of stuff. But I was just impressed. He's just like rattling them off, you know, stuff he's done.
Yeah. And like, I dig his music, and you'll hear in the interview, like people have asked us to check out his band out or him out. And I saw them open up for Faster Pussycat a couple months ago, and they surprised me how good they were. And when he talked about doing a song with Ricky Medlock and Charlie Starr, which you'll hear about, really caught my attention. And Brian, we thought he would be perfect for the podcast.
And he was, and it was great. You know, we just give you a little bit of a spoiler there. He's done some voiceover in video games and music for, but to find out everything else that he does, you're going to listen to our conversation with Jason Charles Miller.
I'm from one of those towns where you leave the windows down, trucks unlocked outside your place, where the
we're at the guest segment of the podcast, and Jason, as always, is going to introduce our guest to you guys.
And it's always my pleasure. Our guest today, you heard in the intro, but we are talking about it now, and I always get the pleasure of trying to figure out the best way to introduce somebody. And I'm going to call you a Southern Rock Renaissance man, because not only are you in the rock, you do all sorts of crazy stuff that I can't wait to talk about that kind of go in a lot of different industries. But today with us, the great Jason Charles Miller. How you doing, Jason?
Hey, glad to be here.
Glad to have you.
How are things in the Los Angeles area? That's where you're at, right?
Yeah, well, I just got back, so I don't know for sure. I got back last night.
But things on fire, you know, there's always fires out there.
Yeah, the hill behind my house isn't on fire, so I'm good.
That's good.
That's all we can really hope for these days.
No fire or no mudslide. Right. Deal with the rest. Mm-hmm. Or earthquake.
Right. There's that old chestnut.
All right. Like Jason said, you're Renaissance man. You've got a lot to talk about, but let's just like get the beginning out of the way first. Like how did you get your start in music, and how did that lead to, you know, being your own band or your own guy?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everyone hopes for that big break. And it's so hard to pinpoint, right? Like what it is like a series of little tiny breaks that keep happening that lead to the next thing, So hopefully the things that you do along the way are what have prepared you for the next big thing. And I feel like I've had the good fortune of having that. My first two records were Meet the Beatles and John Denver's Greatest Hits.
That's quite the juxtaposition there.
Yeah. And so those are the ones that my parents gave me. And from there, like I'd started singing in front of crowds when I was 5 or 6 years old. Then in high school, I started playing in bands as early as I could. You know, I was a little late to guitar. I didn't learn guitar till 14, but always kind of used the guitar as a way to convey the song. I was always a lead singer first, so never went too far into being like a guitar virtuoso, but use it to for the best of my ability, convey the song. But of course, now I'm like randomly been playing guitar for like 30 plus years. So I guess I'm okay. But yeah, so I played clubs a lot when I was in high school. Like, I was too young to actually be a patron at the club. This is in the, I grew up in Virginia, and this was in the Virginia, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Baltimore circuit.
Yeah.
Right.
And major so, metropolitan area. Yeah.
Yeah. Tri-state, its own tri-state area, if you count D.C. as a state. But what would happen would be that I was too young, so I was only allowed to be in the club while I was on stage, and then I'd have to immediately leave the club. I couldn't even like say hi to people afterwards or anything. So yeah, that's how I got my start. And then my band Blind turned into Godhead, and we got signed to a European label first, and we toured over in Europe in the 90s. We were already touring independently in the mid 90s, just as an unsigned act, which you could do back then. Right. And that just led to bigger and bigger things. And then like a big milestone is when we were signed to Marilyn Manson's record label. That was a huge thing for us. And then that really opened the door for us. Obviously, we toured with Marilyn Manson. We toured on the Ozfest. We toured with Linkin Park, you know, Slipknot, Disturbed, Rammstein, you know, in that whole group of bands of that nature.
Classic Southern rock from the 90s.
Right, exactly. Classic Southern rock, you know, like, you know, you think of Skynyrd, the Allman Brothers, and Rammstein. They all go together. Yeah. No. So, but see, growing up in, but that's the thing, like, if you're in a band that's taking off and it's popular, like, that's,
yeah,
that's the route you're going, right? And right. When that started to slow down, that's when I was like, okay, I can finally be a solo artist and do something completely different. You know, Godhead was all machines and very
like industrial rock, like Nine Inch Nails.
Exactly. Manson. Yeah, yeah. It was in that whole Nine Inch Nails, you know, section, you might say. And so I wanted to do something completely organic, totally separated. You know, you can always tell if a song is good by if it's a guy just singing by himself with a guitar. If the song still conveys itself to you in that way, then it's a good song. And I always believed that it didn't need all the bells and whistles. So then any of my solo material was all stripped down as organic as possible, and then building back up to the sound that you hear today.
So your solo stuff, oh, sorry, Brian, you had your hand. Go ahead.
So was Godhead, was that all back in Virginia that you were doing all that? And yeah. I was wondering, because when I watched, you know, Dave Grohl's Sonic Highway special, or that record that he did the songs in different studios.
Yeah.
He talked about DC being huge, you know, talking about the Bad Brains and punk and all that. Did that play in at all to your influences?
Yeah. I mean, I saw Bad Brains in concert before. I saw Fugazi in concert at the basement of a church. Dave Grohl's mom was an English teacher at my high school.
Oh, okay. No kidding.
Yeah. And so when he was in Nirvana, I met him a couple of times, and his mom was always really supportive of musicians at our school. So that was a nice, just cool thing. Like, we played at I think it's every July 4th or July 3rd, they have the DC Smokeout. It's like to legalize weed. And so we played that with Dave. Was already in Nirvana, but his old band Scream, he came back to play a set with Scream, and we opened for them at the DC Smokeout.
Very nice.
Very cool.
That's a lot to unpack. We got to.
I know. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's not even really getting to where, you know, I think I might be the only artist in history who has opened for Marilyn Manson and Alan Jackson.
Right. Because that's what I was saying. When you start doing your solo stuff, it was much more country, like singer songwriter country feel. Right. So industrial metal, country to hard Southern rock is how I'd like to describe you.
That's a great, I love that moniker. Thank you. Yeah, you know, and a lot of people thought I was crazy. I just didn't want to do a new band or a solo project that sounded just like Godhead. I felt like that was too boring. I had all this music in me that I needed to get out. And, you know, growing up in the woods of Virginia, my neighbors had horses, my other neighbors had goats and pigs. Like that's something in my DNA. And I wanted to like tap into that and think about, you know, you sit about and think about who am I as an artist, like what has happened in my life that shapes me into the person that I am today. So, you know, I needed to get that out.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
You know, we were kind of like, you kind of laugh a little bit about that juxtaposition of industrial and country. But the thing I thought about immediately was the records that Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers did with Johnny Cash, and covering Soundgarden and covering Nine Inch Nails and stuff. And I thought so many people, the heavier players have mentioned having such respect for Johnny Cash. So it makes more sense when that came into my head.
Yeah. I mean, I loved all those American recordings that he did with Rick Rubin and his cover of Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, really.
That's the definitive version now, right? Even Trent Reznor said that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is now a Johnny Cash song. And I could think
be worse.
I think the story goes something like Rick Rubin reached out to Trent Reznor to get his blessing, and Trent Reznor said no. And Rick Rubin did it anyway and then sent it to Trent. And he was like, holy crap.
I can't imagine saying no to Johnny Cash wanting to cover one of your songs.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Maybe that, you know, I get it. Like Trent Reznor probably at the time was just very much in his own world, and you know, who knows?
And it's kind of like the opposite of what we see a lot of. So I'll go Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's arguably the greatest American songwriter or living, or maybe of all time. But for me, when I hear other bands cover his material, I like it better. And a lot of hard rock bands or heavier bands do different versions, you know, Hendrix, Guns N' Roses, you know, and it's, you're a good songwriter because other bands, different styles can take your music and make it sound great. And I think it just gets, what I'm getting at is, I think it just shows how good of a songwriter Trent Reznor is, where Johnny Cash can take that song, break it down, and he made it the iconic version that it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So like, where did you, when you were doing your solo career and opening up for Alan Jackson's, when did you start, you know, incorporating more of this kind of like country southern kind of feel to your stuff?
Well, I mean, right away, like, so as soon as Godhead started to slow down, I went full on, I started doing acoustic shows. You know, it was just me and an acoustic guitar with all this new material. I covered a few Godhead songs to kind of keep the old audience interested, or to just kind of sort of show them both sides. But I really did a complete 180 and just did that from day one. I felt like that was, as an artist, something that I had to do to really drive it home that this is what I want to do now. And like, I feel like if the music is in you and you're inspired to do that, and there's a, like, it wasn't a business decision. It was actually a terrible business decision, because I could have just made another band that sounded like Godhead and then just kept going in that, you know, hard rock category circuit and just kept going. You know what I mean? But I basically reinvented everything and just started from scratch. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's easy to say reinvented, but I didn't really reinvent. Here's another part of me that I'm inspired to do that I want to show the world.
How many times did you do Ozfest?
Just the 1 year, but I mean, was, I don't know how many shows.
Three shows.
Yeah.
What is the most interesting thing that you saw while you were part of Ozfest?
Well, I would say the most interesting thing that happened to me from Ozfest is not what happened at Ozfest, but what happened after. And I had a friend, Sarah, who was Jack Osborne's best friend, and I was invited over to the house, over the Osborne house. If you've ever
one
seen
from the show. Yeah.
That one. If you've ever seen the Osbournes, I'm actually in episode one.
What?
I'm clean shaven, but I'm in episode one. I happened to be there that night when they were filming. They filmed almost every night there. But one of the nights that after the crew went home, I found myself alone on the couch with Ozzy. And this was right before his album Down to Earth was about to come out. And he said to me, have you heard my new album? And I said, well, no, because it's not out yet. And he goes, well, let me play it for you. So he rummaged around for a while, found this burnt CD, because this was in 2002, right? Yeah. He found this burnt CD, put it on, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, cool. Like, he's going to play me some songs off the new album. He's probably going to skip around or something. No. He played me the entire album from beginning to end, and he sang along to every song.
Wow.
And it was just me and Ozzy sitting on his couch and Ozzy singing. And I'm like doing everything I can not to freak out, but I'm just like, okay, this is happening. And, you know, after that night, I was like, well, I can pretty much die now, and like nothing like this is the pinnacle. Like, I'm now can do anything that I want,
because you had a private concert from Ozzy.
Yeah, exactly. I just got a private concert from Ozzy Osbourne on his couch, and my life is complete. So now everything else is just icing.
It's been all downhill since that one.
But it's actually been great, because I've just been up here ever since that day for like 20 years.
Very high, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just sailing up here. I'm still sailing from that night. And the only way that I can prove that happened, because everyone was gone at that point, it was just me and him. And the only way that that story is even a little bit believable is just the fact that there is proof that I was there at that house.
Yeah.
I can never prove that happened, but it really did.
I'm going to the YouTubes tonight to see if I can't find a clip of that. And well, he doesn't look anything like that guy. This guy has a beard we just talked to.
Yeah. No, I'm wearing an Edward Scissorhands t-shirt. I still have this tattoo. You can match the tattoo.
Okay. We'll post on our social media screenshots of what you look like now versus then.
Yeah.
For anybody doubting Jason's story. No, that's pretty awesome, man. That's
a great story.
Yeah.
We always ask people like, interesting or something that sticks out from tours or whatever, and I'm always intrigued by what people say. And but, a private concert from Ozzy, Brian, is probably up there towards the top of what we've heard so far.
Ozfest in general, though, was really fun. It was like a summer camp for bands, you know.
Yeah.
I also remember we had we were on, that was the year that they had three stages, and we were the last band on the third stage, but we had 5 minute changeovers. So we actually had a rehearsal day for changeovers, and 5 minute changeovers is insane, right? Yeah. Like full everything, drums, amps, everything, 5 minutes. But like with everyone working in tandem, we did it. And if you didn't, you had this huge guy yelling at you the entire time. It was like a big, it was like a drill instructor was just yelling at you.
I figured Sharon would come out to yell at you.
Yeah. Not to the second and third stages. No.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. That's the main stage. Shit. So how did you do that with the drums? Did you guys all have to run and take pieces of it?
Everybody was just waiting with a piece, you know? Yeah. And then the other band had to do the same thing, like just grab, you know?
Lord have mercy. Well, how do you go from Ozfest to doing your great music? Here's a Jason Charles Miller. Is it a band, or is it, you consider yourself a solo artist? Because you have a really great live band.
Yeah, I love everybody in my band. I'm a solo artist, but okay. I have had a good lineup now for a long time. So like everyone that you saw that night has been with me for a long time. Although it was a fill-in drummer for that tour, but he's been a friend of mine for 20 years. So it's like he was family already. But my band is definitely the band that I've chosen to represent my sound and me and everything.
Yeah, because you guys were, I saw you opening up for Faster Pussycat in Columbus, and you guys really caught my attention, you know? I was like, man, who is this? And of course, Brian and I do this blues and Southern rock podcast. I'm like, shit, these guys are like, I said earlier, hard Southern rock. Like, this is good stuff. And I'm pretty sure, Brian, some point, somebody at Twitter or Instagram sent us a message saying, check out Jason Charles Miller. Mm-hmm. And I always meant to get around to it, but I'm actually glad I heard you guys play live before I checked out any of your studio stuff, because you guys were such a powerhouse live band. Not that your Thank recordings you. Are bad, but it was like, just, you know, three guitarists, right? You got your lead, you got a rhythm, you play guitar, just a killer group.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's really, yeah, the lineup that I have right now, I think really represents like where I want my sound to be, and you know, where we want to take it, like for the next album and everything.
Are they all LA players, or are they people you kind of picked up throughout your career across
they
the country?
Live in LA, but only one is from LA. Ali K is the only one who grew up in LA. Our drummer's from New York, our other guitar players from Rhode Island, our bass players from England, and then my other drummer, who is normally our number one guy, he's from Brazil, but we all ended up in LA.
Oh wow. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So
we met in LA.
It's very cool to hear that you played with Ozzy. We didn't know that, or you hung out with Ozzy and you kind of played with Ozzy. So he's singing to you.
You're on Ozfest.
On Ozfest, technically, we could say we opened for him, even though there were probably like 15.
You're part of the Ozzy family.
But you know, the one person that we do know that you did a song with, or a couple of the guys you did a song with, and we're both wearing Blackberry Smoke T-shirts, and Charlie's been on twice. Word on the street is he's coming on again. And how did that come about with you and him and Ricky Medlock for Old Scarecrow?
Yeah. So actually, when I was in Godhead is when I met Ricky, and we had the same publicist, and she introduced us and thought we would get along because Ricky has done some acting, and my side job is that I'm a voice actor. I've been in over 100 video games. I'm in a ton of anime commercials. I narrate audiobooks. That's, you know, my I call it my side job, but actually it probably pays more bills than music most of the time. but yeah, so because Ricky was interested in acting, and I was already doing a lot of voice acting, she thought we would get along, and like we've been friends ever since. I met Charlie separately through a mutual friend, and you know, became a Blackberry Smoke fan instantly. Mm-hmm. Ricky told me about this song that he and Charlie had started called Old Scarecrow, and he sent me an early demo tape of it. I added a bridge, completed the song, my version, then asked Charlie and Ricky to sing on it, Ricky to play on it, And so that was on my 2018 album, In the Wasteland. Then Charlie let me know that they were going to record a Blackberry Smoke version, very different from mine. I mean, the choruses are the same. Mm-hmm. If I didn't mention it, Stuart Carreras finished that version with me. The version that's on Blackberry Smoke's album is obviously very different, but he was like, this is in no way, a diss of your version. We just wanted to do it our way. I'm like, yeah, man. Awesome. So Stuart and I are considered co-writers on both versions, like in the world of royalties, which was cool because, you know, they use a little bit of my version of the ending, but they're very much like two versions of the same song. It's a pretty interesting way I love kind of where they both fit and sit. And since Charlie's singing on both versions, like clearly he's okay with
that's
my
that
version.
Bridge between the two, you know?
Yeah.
And that caught my attention when I saw you guys, because you brought that up, like, hey, you know, you guys know a band, Blackberry Smoke. I did the song with Ricky Mellock and Charlie Starr. And then I was like, fuck, that's Old Scarecrow. And like, I remember after the concert and Brian and I were doing a podcast, I brought that up and was talking to him. I was like, we got to get Jason Charles Miller on. Not only is he a kick-ass band, that's great, but dude, he's got a Blackberry Smoke connection too. Like, they did a song together.
Yeah.
Your version's great.
When you
your
have him back like on, you gotta tell him that I was on when you have him.
He knows you're on
for sure. Yeah.
Oh, does he? Okay, cool.
Yeah, you bumped him.
What? No way.
We were trying to make a time work out this week, and it really wasn't. So we cemented you as the slot just because his time was unsure.
Okay.
But you could tell next time you saw him that you bumped him on a podcast.
All right. I will. I think I'm going to see him in September. They haven't been out in LA since, before the pandemic. So I'll be happy to see them out here on the West Coast. We were crossing paths on that tour we were on with Faster Pussycat. We were playing the same cities like days apart.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, how about when he played the whiskey when he was filling in with the Crows?
Yeah, that was really cool. Yeah.
Were you around then or were you out doing your stuff?
No, I was around. But I was around and I know the owner of the whiskey and I still couldn't get in.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
That was like locked down. Every single person had. And because he was filling in for the Crows, he couldn't get me in. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, that was the hottest ticket in town.
That performance was amazing, though. His tone and his feel just matched so well. Like, he's right there with Mark Ford on some of the stuff that he was playing.
Oh, yeah.
Just incredible. Just incredible player. But going back to Old Scarecrow, your version is great. Your version is definitely like more of a punch you in the mouth type of version. Theirs is more sitting in the back of a truck drinking a beer, but they're both great. And I love the fact that you guys did these together and we have these two different versions of the song. And man, that really caught my attention when you guys played it live. Again, can't speak enough to you and your band, just how impressed I was when I saw you guys.
Thank you. I love that people are still discovering my version now too. And obviously since Charlie sings on it, I think anyone that hears it knows there's got to be a story behind this. You know?
Yeah. And like, what kind of, is it a story of how you guys got him to sing on, or is the story of the actual song itself? Like, where did Old Scarecrow come from?
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you get that gig with Faster Pussycat?
Well, I've known Tammy for 20 plus years, and he was paying attention to what I was doing and thought it could work. And I thought it could work too. We're currently on the same record label, which is a label called Golden Robot Records out of Australia. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're an international company, but their headquarters are in Australia. So being on the same label, kind of, we have more things to talk about recently, you know, and having the same management helped. But I felt like if you know, everybody puts all these bands that were at their height in the 80s in the same category, right? But if you think about Faster Pussycat Sound, it's very blues based. It's more blues based than a lot of bands from that era. Right. And so since my sound is also blues based, I really felt like it could work. And that night in Columbus and the other 24 shows beyond that really made it. I think it worked probably as well as it possibly could. The audience was so supportive, and I sold over double of the merch that I thought I was going to sell. So
you had a big line, because I was going to go talk to you and introduce myself and talk about the podcast, but you had so many people, and I'm like, I'm not going to bother this guy who's selling his stuff and like interacting with fans, just to talk shop.
Thanks. Yeah, that's the thing, that when you're the opening band, man, you sell your own stuff. You know, you're down in the trenches, because there's not a whole lot of wiggle room budget wise to have a bunch of crew people. So you got to do it all yourself. But
you had a big ass line there, though, man. I kept looking over for my chance, and nope, there's just people after people.
So you mentioned that you've known Tammy for 20 years, and just it made me think that we might have a mutual friend, maybe two, one that wasn't in Pussycat, but Ace Von Johnson. You know Ace at all?
I know Ace. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And we had Adam Hamilton on, who, of course, does drums on the LA Guns records.
I don't know Adam. Yeah, but I do know Ace. So
You know Sam Bam Colton, who we've had on the podcast as well, because he was playing Pussycat.
Yeah, and he actually also has played with me. So there was a show where Mike
doesn't he play with?
Yeah, he plays.
does that kid sleep?
I don't think so. But yeah, it was a one show at the Whiskey. Gary, my regular guitar player, wasn't available. And so Sam did it. It was awesome.
Right on.
He's like a savant. Like, he can just do anything.
Yeah.
That's why I was there. Sam left me tickets to go to the show. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to go. Like, I live in Columbus. I like Pussycat. And I thank you, Sam, for doing that. And I got to see you guys kick some ass on the stage.
Yeah, thank you, Sam.
So what commercials have you done voiceovers in?
Pop-Tarts.
Okay.
Yep. Classic.
Skechers, oddly. Right.
Yeah.
A bunch I don't remember.
Well, how do you get those gigs, though? Like, how do you get into voice acting?
Yeah, well, actually, in between tours, actually, with Godhead, I wrote a song for a Pop-Tarts commercial, and then sang in the commercial. But because it was a national commercial, I was eligible to join the Screen Actors Guild. So I thought, you know, I'm here now. I live in Hollywood. I live in LA. This could be something that I could do on the side. So I took some voice acting lessons. And the very first voice acting job I got was in an anime called Hellsing, which was about vampires. And the guy that gave me the shot was, his name's Taliesin Jaffe, and he was a Godhead fan. So he was a fan of my music, gave me a shot at doing anime. And then from there, I started getting more and more bookings. I started getting an agent, and I've been doing it for 20 years.
Pop-Tart commercial. So were you hired, or did you just randomly write a Pop-Tart commercial and send it in?
We were there was our publisher at the time recommended this company that sort of like booked musicians into commercials.
Okay, that was your in. So my son, who's now 20 years old, loved the Batman, the Brave and the Bold, and we watched the shit out of that. I see you have a voice acting credit for that show. Who did you do? What did you cover in that?
I was in the Uncle Sam episode. So I was Doll Man, and I was also Black Condor.
Okay, Doll Man and Black Condor.
That was part of Uncle Sam's Freedom Fighters.
Yeah, I remember that show, actually. I know, you know, everybody always compares everything to Batman, the animated series, rightfully so, because it's probably the best depiction of Batman we've seen on the screen. But for such a 90-degree turn from that, Batman, Brave and the Bold was really well done, very funny. And for a jaded adult like myself, I loved the hell out of it.
I think it was more that Brave and the Bold, I thought was more of like a nod to the Adam West Batman.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it had that vibe to it.
Yeah. They were in on the joke about themselves for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it just made it enjoyable to watch, and all the different characters, like Aquaman was amazing because he was so, and you know, he thought so highly of himself, egocentric, egotistical, that he was funny. And you know, yeah, it was just great. So I could not go by and not talk to you and ask you about that, so I can tell my son, and then we can go back and watch it for nostalgia's sake.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Can we talk just a few minutes about your latest record, Cards on the Table?
Sure. I'd love to.
How did that all come about?
So a lot of those songs I put together over the pandemic. Some of them I recorded before, some of them I finished during, and I wanted to just get something out. So I put out these two EPs called From the Wreckage, Part One and Part Two. And then the guys from Golden Robot approached me and said, hey, why don't we put those together as one album, and then we'll re-release them and promote it properly. And I was all for it. But yeah, a lot of those songs were ones that I had kind of sitting and waiting around to do something, you know, when I was supposed to be on a tour, on a plane, right when everything got locked down. And in LA, you know, we had really strong lockdowns.
Yeah.
So I had I had that tour cancel. I had another tour cancel. And then I was supposed to go to the UK, and then they changed the COVID rules at the last minute. So then I was supposed to be sequestered for 4 days and then take it. Like I would have missed like half the tour. So things kept getting canceled. So I started streaming on Twitch, and I started doing acoustic concerts on Twitch twice a week and just taking requests, and just kept adding more and more songs to my request lists. And that was something that I was able to do, and I still do it. If I'm not on tour, I'm on Twitch every Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 9 Pacific, just playing acoustically, because it keeps my chops up, it keeps my voice active. And I mean, I had other musician friends that were so depressed that they were like, I'm not even looking at a guitar right now. And I respected that too, but for me, I couldn't stop. So I already have 4 songs for the next record recorded, and I have a lot of music, you know, in the pipe, ready to go.
Estimate, what's your estimate on that next record coming out?
I think that kind of depends on what's going to happen with the promotion for this record, but I would think next year for sure.
Well, let us know. We'd love, you know, come back on and definitely market your stuff there, and we can talk more about your, we're not going to get to everything in your career in an hour, because I'm like looking at all my notes and I'm like, it's 45 minutes in. I haven't like scratched the surface of everything. That'd be cool. All the cool shit that you do.
I feel really fortunate because I have a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, but they're all in under the entertainment bubble, you know?
Yeah. And what I was surprised to see, and like, since I really started following you on social media, is you're big in the gaming industry. Yeah. How did you get into that? And like, what makes you so big, I guess, on that industry? Cause you're at cons and doing all this stuff all the time.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of crossover between people that play video games and people that play Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop role-playing games, which I'm heavily.
Dio was the ultimate guy. He did music and he was Dungeons and Dragons.
I know. I was really happy that we played the Dio Cancer Benefit concert this year, and Wendy already invited us back for next year. So that was really cool. And then when I was in Florida, I did an event called D&D-O, and we raised we charged money to play D&D, and then raised money for the Cancer Foundation. So that was really cool. And then I reached out to the folks at D&D and they said that next year we could stream it like on their official channel. So we're going to raise a lot of money for cancer research, hopefully.
Which is great. But yeah, like how did you really train, you know?
Well, that's the thing. Like it's so right place, right time, you know, and for a lot of these things and for organizers knowing me already. So just sort of being out there in the scene and knowing people and being at the right place at the right time and having someone recommend me for something. I sing three songs in the Final Fantasy 14 soundtrack.
Yep.
Which right now Final Fantasy 14 is the most subscribed video game in the world. And last weekend at the Las Vegas Convention Center, I sang those songs in front of 15,000 people.
Wow.
It's an amazing, amazing phenomena. And I've just gotten really lucky. And so 10 years ago, I sang on the Metal Gear Rising soundtrack, which then, led me to be on this soundtrack. But then I have three songs that I co-wrote and sing on for Cyberpunk 2077, the Keanu Reeves video game.
Yeah.
And the way that came about was the music supervisor, I wrote a song with his wife at some point. And her name is Amanda Mosier. She's an Americana artist, but she was in a band called Calico. And, you know, it's just like people knowing different people. So that is a side project that I have that actually sounds a lot more like Godhead used to sound, called Rezodrone. And we were hired by Blizzard recently to do six remixes to promote the video game Diablo 4. So yeah. I'm always working on that stuff because one, I live in LA and have you seen the rent prices? You know, and two, just because, you know, the person that hired me for that knew me from a web musical that I wrote some songs for 8 years earlier and now works at Blizzard. I mean, it's just being around and doing good work and showing up on time and I guess being likable, hopefully.
Professional, yeah.
Yeah.
So do you have time for a quick lightning round?
I do, but before we do the lightning round, Brian, I wanted to tell you my Jacksonville
story.
Connection.
Yeah.
So speaking of the gaming community, so there's a very, very popular show on Twitch called Critical Role, and it's the number one Dungeons & Dragons show in the world. In fact, it's so popular that they they did a deal with Amazon and now they have a cartoon about their show called The Legend of Vox Machina. And so I wrote the theme song for their first campaign and for their second campaign. So it was about 7 years I co-wrote the theme song to that show. And the wrestler Brandon Cutler was also a fan of that show. He's a D&D player. So he reached out to me to write his theme song, his like coming to the ring theme song. And when I was sent the paperwork for it, I guess AEW wrestling was in such early days that it actually was on Jacksonville Jaguars head letter.
The owner of the Jags, his son owns AEW.
Right. Yeah.
Everything in Jacksonville, don't they?
Yeah, if they're not on the road all through the pandemic, they shot it where the Jacksonville Jaguars play,
right,
and then now they're traveling again. But it was really cool to get this paperwork with the Jacksonville Jaguars letterhead at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So right on. I still have that.
That is We had Alan Paul on a couple weeks ago, the writer, journalist, to talk because he has a new Allman Brothers book out. And we kind of joked and called his career very Forrest Gumpian because he just was at the right place, right time. You're also very Forrest Gumpian. I like everything's happened for you.
I think you're right. I've never thought about it that way, but I think you're right. I mean, you're totally right.
You know, when they do the Jason Charles Miller story, we're going to have the Aussie singing to you on the couch. We're going to have all the, you know, all the gamer stuff, all the rock stuff. And it's going to be, like all those points in history.
But I mean, don't get me wrong. I play these games. I've played Dungeons and Dragons since I was 10 years old. So the fact that like I'm involved with that now and stream that and I've written music directly for Dungeons and Dragons for their YouTube channel and their Twitch channel. And, you know, I'm the genuine article. Like that's just part of me. So same with, you know, video games and all that. So I think people also see that for as much as you can see the authenticity that, yes, I did grow up in the woods of Virginia in the middle of nowhere. I also really like nerdy things too.
You didn't take it to heart of that Tom Hanks movie where it was about the dangers of Dungeons and Dragons. Do you remember that, guys? You guys remember that? It came out
Mazes
and Monsters. Yes.
You know what's through Dungeons and Dragons, I've hung out with and I'm friends with Joe Manganiello, but I also hung out with Vince Vaughn and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. Oh, like I know Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, not from music, but from the fact we both play Dungeons and Dragons. How funny is that?
Yeah, I see, Brian, I see stuff all the time. There's like a celebrity subculture of gamers, and like whether tabletop games or video games. And I think, and Jason, you could probably correct me, is like, we're all very close in the same age here. It's our generation was like really the home video game, Dungeons and Dragons, the tabletop stuff really came to, I guess, its peak popularity when we were all young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. we're now adults with jobs and responsibilities, and we still do it.
Yep. The geeks have inherited the earth. All right, I'm ready for the lightning round.
Brian, the catchphrase, please.
Jason, is it that time of the show?
It is that time. Jason, it's not to you. It's to this other Jason.
Okay.
Like one out of every three boys born in the 70s named Jason.
Our parents thought they were so unique.
Right, mine too. And I went to a small rural elementary school, and I had two other Jasons in my grade, like three Jasons in a class, like 70 kids.
Wow.
Go freaking figure. Yeah. All right. What was your first concert you ever went to?
Heart.
Oh, badass. Where'd you see them?
At the Baltimore Civic Center. I begged my dad to take me.
Fuck,
and then he saw their picture and was like, of course I'll take you.
Yes, son. This is your activity. We will go. What's the first guitar you ever owned?
I still have it. It's a Fender Squire.
Oh, so you started out electric first.
Fender Strat Squire. Yeah, I learned on electric, then acoustic later.
Interesting. Okay. First video game console?
The Atari 2600,
as it was called. Yes.
Back then, it was just called the Atari.
Yeah. Brian, was that you too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was both your guys' favorite games on the Atari 2600? Brian, what was yours? Did you have one?
Me, Miss Pac-Man. That came a little later.
Yeah.
Jason, mine was Pitfall. One ghost.
What was yours?
Pitfall.
Yeah,
oh, Pitfall. Yeah, Pitfall. Everybody loved Pitfall. Did you try to go through it and earn points, like which was supposed to be the game, or did you just try to run and see how far you could get before time?
No, I tried to earn points because if you got a certain number of points, you could get a patch. If you took a picture of your TV,
My brother did that.
So I got it, and then I remember my dad was at a dinner or something, and so I got it while he was at a dinner, and. You know, this is back when like we didn't have cameras on our phones, so like I had to wait for my dad to get home to get a camera to take a picture of the TV to then get it developed to then send it into Activision to get the patch. But I did get it.
I got you had to protect patch. The Atari with your life, so nobody unplugged.
Right, so nobody reset it or anything. Yeah. Just hold it on the screen until somebody gets home.
Then having that fancy saving on video games that you got now.
Right.
Oh, good Lord. What is the greatest home video game console of all time?
I'm going to have to go with Sega Genesis.
Ooh, interesting choice.
Because that was like at a moment in my life in like high school going into college that I just really got into video games from playing Altered Beast and Phantasy Star. Those were my two games that I played the most on the Sega Genesis.
Interesting. So I don't disagree with you, the Genesis. And I would say either the original NES or Sega Genesis. But most of the people that pick the Genesis, like if I go to the Genesis route, it's because of the sports catalog, the original Madden, NHL hockey, which was phenomenal, you know, all of that. So
I played the crap out of Madden for sure.
Dude, that we played the shit out of the NHL hockey, like first one in 92, 93, when they finally started having actual player names and just the sports games were unbelievable on Genesis.
Yeah, and I mean, and it was unprecedented. So you were just like, wow, I can be, you know, Eric Dickerson and have him run for a touchdown. Like, how cool is that?
You know? Yeah. Brian, did you play sports games too? Did you go with the Genesis?
You know, my brother used to kick my ass on the Atari 2600. So I kind of like, after that, I didn't play until the Rumi days in the early 90s. I think that was like Nintendo, Mario Kart.
Yeah. Like the Super Nintendo.
That's
Nintendo
about it, basically.
64. Okay. All right. Yeah. Just such nostalgia for those early game consoles.
Yeah.
And the Nintendo games are hard as shit, right? Like those games were just brutalized you. Good Lord. Yeah. All right. We'll go back to music right now. What's your favorite place to play a show?
You mean like what kind of venue?
Yeah. Or like you have a favorite club or theater or just, you know, like
well, I mean, I'm definitely like, I'm definitely partial to the 930 Club in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I know that that keeps winning awards, so good for them. It's just such a great place to play, and it's a great place to see a show. I did really enjoy the King of Clubs in Columbus. They've done a great job there. If I'm thinking of places that we played on this tour that felt really like just good and big.
And it was nice. Like we were talking with everybody before you're listening, but before we got recording and that place, well, one, that place is kind of, not the club, but that area is a dump. But when I was just got out of college in the late '90s, that was a happening nightlife area. There were shops, restaurants, all these clubs. And it's sort of as the downtown arena district where the hockey arena and all that stuff is kind of built up, that died. But when I went there to see you guys, it's the first time I've been to King of Clubs. And I'm like, you know, I know it's in the continent. Like, what's this going to look like? And I got there and I walked in. I was like, holy shit, this place is really nice. Nice bar, lighting, like the bathrooms were nice. I could not believe it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sound was good. It looked like the stage was like very roomy. Nobody was cramped up there.
Yeah. It's always nice when you have a big stage like that to do a lot of room and just jump around and stuff.
Jumper. And then I, like immediately after that, I saw Samantha Fish and Eric Johansson play. And I was like, I'm just like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go see Brother Kane and Jared James Nichols, I think in November. I was expecting to get stabbed or shot. And I came out of there going, man, I'm going to come back to this place.
Yeah. No, that whole area is really nice where that club is.
Yeah. They've done like it went downhill and they've done a lot to work up that area. Cause it's in a very prominent area of Columbus, like 270 and 161, two major roadways. So it made sense, but I just know it kind of, it had seen better days at one point.
Yeah. Cool.
Where is a place that you aspire to play one day?
I mean, I'd love to play Red Rocks. I mean, I know it'd be opening for somebody, of course, but it would still be amazing. So
I don't know. You take this Final Fantasy, thing out, like there's like, aren't you supposed to go to Japan and play like a big symphonic
I did that in December, but in January FanFest Tokyo is at the Tokyo Dome.
Oh,
55,000 people, so that's gonna
does that intimidate you? You know, you paid for play
well,
for 15,
here's what I say Vegas. Here's what I say to people. Say once you see the first 1,000 people, the next 20,000 don't matter because you don't see them.
That's true with the lighting and everything.
Yeah.
What is the craziest thing that you've seen though performing from the stage?
Oh man. I mean, I've definitely seen fights. You know, oh man, that's tough. trying to think of what I've seen from the stage. Maybe at one of the Ozfests, it was raining, and so it just became a mud fest, and everybody started slinging mud at each other, and mud at us, and you know, it was just a free for all of mud.
I'm gonna word association. I'm gonna give throw your word out there, and words I should say, cruising for a bruising.
Yeah, Disney.
I have an 18-year-old daughter, Jason.
I mean, talk about Forrest Gump, right? Like, that was a thing where my friend Mitch Allen was writing all these songs for Disney, and I was joking, like, you know, you got to get me on one of those Disney songs, dude. And so one day he was like, hey, do you want to be in on one of these Disney songs? And then it turned out to be the highest selling song of my career. I have a platinum record from that. And I joke, I'm like, the most successful song of my entire career is probably the stupidest song I've ever written.
That song is from Teen Beach Movie. And my daughter, who's now 18, but when that came out, I don't know if she's 10, 12, whatever.
Perfect age.
We were on vacation in Florida with my wife's brother. He has a bunch of daughters around the same age. And we had to leave dinner at a restaurant early to get back to the house so all the girls could watch Teen Beach Movie.
That's awesome. And that
song, it's a good song because it sticks in your brain and makes you crazy. It's very catchy.
Yeah.
I'm hearing it in my head right now just talking about it.
It's got that 50s. Well, I guess that's the mark of a good song.
It is. You bastard.
And it's so funny because guys that I couldn't get songwriting appointments with.
Yeah.
Like once that song came out and that was popular, all of a sudden I was getting songwriting appointments with them.
We contributed to your platinum album, just so you know. We've got that CD floating around here somewhere, hopefully in a box.
Thanks.
Hiding from the, yeah, you're welcome. Thank my daughter. I had nothing to do with it. Oh my God. Brian, I can hear the song in my head.
See, now I'm gonna have to go find it and then it'll be in my head too. So
it will,
you won't be alone.
The whole premise of that movie is present day kids get transported back in time to like a 50s or 60s beach movie. Mm-hmm. And the Cruising for a Bruising has that very doo-woppy like pop sound that came.
It's like Johnny B. Good crossed with the time warp.
Yes. Yes. That's a good difference. But that's amazing. So you've affected both of my kids' life, Jason. Both, like, this is the first artist we've had on, Brian, that have affected my children.
Nice.
I don't know if that's, you know, be proud, I suppose. All right, getting back to stupid questions. What is the greatest cartoon theme song?
Oh, it's got to be G.I. Joe.
Oh, that was.
I mean, think about it. It even has those key changes and stuff, but it lays it all out there for you of what the show is about.
It is, and it makes you inspired to, you know, kick evil's ass when you listen mm-hmm. to it. Have you heard the version from G.I. Joe, the movie?
You mean the one with like
Don Johnson and all that? Like,
I haven't.
It's weird. Look it up on YouTube. It starts out with a very Cobra centric theme before it goes to the classic G.I. Joe theme song.
Okay, I will.
To be a successful cartoon in the 80s, though, you had to have a kick-ass theme song, right?
Right, and it usually needed to explain exactly what the cartoon was about.
Yes. We didn't have time for exposition in a 22-minute commercial to sell a toy. Your theme song has to tee everything up. What about Mask? Mask was always one of my favorite theme songs, too. That's a kick-ass.
Yeah. That was the one with, like, the cars, right?
The cars, The cars kind of transformed into an ulterior, you know, vehicle, and then they had these special masks that can do things.
Jace and the Wheeled Warriors.
Yes.
That was another good theme song. And of course, like, I'm sure you and I were both partial to that one. So the guy's name was Jace.
That's right. I think I had one or two of the toys, perhaps, maybe even at one time. Transformers, Thundercats, Silverhawks. Yeah. I mean, Gummy Bears, stick them in Disney.
One of the cool moments, one of the cool feather in my cap as a voice actor is I got to voice Optimus Prime in a video game. In a video game.
Which one?
Yeah. So World of Warships, they had a Transformers crossover. So if you play World of Warships, when the Transformers are in that game, I'm Optimus Prime.
Holy shit.
I got to get on the mic, but it's like, you know.
This guy has done everything. He's insane. I can't let you go though before I got to talk about something. So my friend Matt loved the TV show or the web series The Guild. I never really watched it, but I myself am a huge fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And there's a person that is in both of those, Felicia Day. You did a song with her for the Guild TV series.
Yeah, right? I did a song with her for the Guild called Game On. Then we did a duet together called Gamer Girl Country Boy. If you haven't seen that, you got to check out.
I watched the video today.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's super fun.
And I sent it to my friend Matt. And he's like, who is this guy? I'm like, well, we're interviewing him. He's like, all right, you know.
She's a huge reason why I have such a good career in the gaming world, too, because she did a lot of introductions for me and hired me to do a lot of things for her various companies. And that was mainly due to the fact that a guy named Greg Aronowitz, who is the production designer for the Guild, but also is a great director in his own right. He directed me in a sci-fi channel movie called Battle Planet. We became friends, and then he recommended me to produce some music for Felicia Day, and then the rest was history. And then I was even in a couple episodes of The Guild in season 5. That was really neat.
I knew she could sing because of Mystery Science Theater. She's been on the new seasons. But then I watched the videos, the one with you two, which is fun. It's very funny. It's super creative, really well done. And then some other songs that she did for the Guild. Like she's really talented.
Yeah. And then she was in a musical called Dr. Horrible with
Sing Along. Yeah.
Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog, it was called.
Yeah, with the dude that plays Doogie Howser, and then How I Met Your Mother, right? Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris, and then Nathan Fillion is in it too.
Yep. So, Brian, he's hitting all my sweet spots with everything right now. Not only do we love the type of music that you do, but even I'm more of a nerd than Brian is, but even that stuff that like it's just. It's incredible all the things that you've done. And I wasn't joking when I called you a Renaissance man in the intro, because you're in everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Well, you know, like I said, the rent's high.
It should be cheap because you have to go earthquake, fire, mudslide. I don't know.
Well, I know, but we've got all those insurances too, you know.
That's true. Luckily, you don't have hurricanes yet, but I hear the Sharknadoes could be an issue there on the West
Coast. Yeah, I mean, that's sooner or later.
I mean, if you're part of the Sci-Fi Channel pantheon of movies, that's right there, right? Sharknadoes? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I did work with Billy Ray Cyrus quite a bit, and he was in one of the Sharknadoes, so.
I think everybody at some point ended up being in Sharknado, right?
Yeah, I know. I need to be in one, man. They better make another one.
Are you a horror movie fan?
Yeah.
What is your favorite horror movie?
Probably, and this is going to be a weird one because a lot of people didn't think it was that great, but Salem's Lot.
What? Brian, you remember that. That was a TV series in the early. It's freaked the shit out of me.
Yeah, yeah.
That kid floating outside the
book,
window.
I was a real big fan of the book. But they changed the vampire a lot in the movie, but I still really liked it. And I've heard that they're making another one, so I'm really excited about that.
A remake of the first, like the original series?
Yeah, it could be really cool. Yeah.
I had seen Return to Salem's Lot. Not quite as good as the first one, but man, as a kid, like again, we were all kids when that came out. The kid floating outside the window, scratching at it with his nails, still freaks me the hell out to this day.
Yeah.
All right, two last questions for you real fast. What is the greatest horror movie soundtrack of all time?
Well, it's got to be Queen of the Damned because I had a song on it.
I see you on there.
No, but that's a great soundtrack. That is a really great soundtrack.
Yeah, that has was it Aaliyah
on it? Yeah, Aaliyah. Well, she doesn't even sing in it. She starred in the movie. She doesn't sing on the soundtrack. The soundtrack has like the Deftones. It's got four songs or five songs that Jonathan Davis wrote for the movie, you know, okay. from Korn. So it's got it's got Orgy, it's got Static X. Yeah, that's a great soundtrack. It's Disturbed, a lot of cool stuff.
And you were on the Punisher soundtrack as well, right? The Thomas Jane whatever one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dude, look at you. It's like the master. Okay. Before I send you off, I lied. I have two questions. Again, it was three, now it's two. What do you like to do in your time off on tour?
I really don't have any. because I'm in any spare time I have on tour, I'm usually recording voiceover auditions underneath a blanket. I bring a travel microphone and I put a blanket over my head so that there's no echo, and then I'm sending them back. So, if I have a moment, it would either be playing video games or go see a movie or something.
Okay. All right. So you do get pretty, some downtime and
pedestrian pursuits. Okay.
All right. You're a man of many talents and interests and things. So give us a guilty pleasure. Normally I ask for a guilty pleasure song or artist, but I just want to hear, because you've got your toe in so many different waters, a guilty pleasure for you.
For as an artist, like a guilty pleasure musician, artist, or
guilty movie, TV show, game, music, whatever, just because you do so many different things. Like, what's a guilty pleasure for you?
Well, I mean, I'm a gigantic J.R.R. Tolkien fan, fanatic. And I mean, it was like the thrill of my life to be cast in one of the games. I got to be an orc in Lord of the Rings: Rise to War. So my hobby is like studying and collecting Middle Earth, Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkien books, artifacts, items, things like that.
Have you read like the I can't even pronounce it. Silmarillion.
Yeah, I've read it like six times.
Okay, that's a tough one to get through, man.
Yeah.
You gotta be dedicated.
What I recommend to everyone is there's an odd. So one of the big chunks of the Silmarillion is a story called The Children of Hurin, and then they published it later as a standalone book and went into a lot more of the details of the story. Christopher Lee, right before he died, he narrated the audiobook.
Oh no shit. And
you haven't lived until you've heard Christopher Lee narrate an audiobook. It's the coolest experience ever with that deep, deep voice.
Yeah. I mean, he was in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
You know, fuck. Did you like the Amazon series? The, was it the Power of the Rings? I think.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I'm a fan of the books. So, you know, I watched each episode many times and just like picked it all apart. So I'm looking forward to the second season. It didn't really have the same emotional impact as the Peter Jackson movies did.
Yeah.
But I think they really did a great job. I'm anxious to see what they're going to do next.
I liked it enough. I thought it was a bit uneven in the plotting and some of the characters, like, because we've seen what the characters look like down the road or read about them, and some of the actions that the characters took, I question. I think they were for plot reasons and not necessarily what you think that character would actually done.
And that was all made up by the showrunners. It wasn't really Tolkien's work. They took like a few sentences that Tolkien wrote and said, let's make a whole series out of it. And it's like, okay, here we go.
But I like fantasy shit too, and Lord of the Rings. So I'm watching it, you know, but I think it's fine. Well, you know, maybe it's one of those Elseworlds tales when they always do the comic book stuff and like, you know, it's not canon, but it's
right. Something. Yeah.
All right, Jason, thank you so much for being on, dude. You got to come back. I didn't even scratch the surface on most of the notes I had about you.
I'll definitely come back. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. Where do we send our listeners to go find out more about you? Shows, albums, tours, acting credits.
If you can remember my name, and I know it's a mouthful, but jasoncharlesmiller.com has the links to everything, you know, too.
And it does, because I'm on there right now. Music, shows, shop, bio, contact, gaming, acting. Brian, he's the man of a million talents.
You are correct. And before we sign off with you, this is, I usually don't make any like wishes for a horror, cheesy horror movie show, but we have to have snakes on a plane flying through Sharknado.
Oh, that's anyway, awesome.
Sorry, Brian, I'm going to interrupt your closing. That sharksploitation thing on Shudder where they talk about the history of the sharks in movies. If you haven't seen it, if you have Shudder, check it out. And it talks about
Sharknado.
All right. Thank you so much, Jason Charles Miller, for being on. The latest record is Cards on the Table. You are a Renaissance man. Thank you so much for coming on. We want to have you back on again and again and again. So thank you so much.
I'd love to. Thanks, Brian and Jason.
Thank you so much for our new friend, Jason Charles Miller, for being on. Someone we want to have him back again, on again and again and again, repetitively. A lot of great material there. And we're going to need several episodes to get through everything else that he does.
I wasn't lying when I said I just scratched the surface on my notes and looking at his website with all the different things he's done. Of course, number one is the great music. Like, he's doing this, as we talked about, hard Southern rock thing. Like, his music is like a hard version of Blackberry Smoke. So if you like Blackberry Smoke and you like harder edge music, like, again, Brian and I are old metal guys, right up your alley. And then you'll find out all these other things that he's done in his career with gaming, video games, like, just, I mean, that guy's got stories and things for ages, I'm sure.
Well, not only the musical diversity going from, you know, like a super heavy industrial thing and then kind of getting into this kind of like Southern country heaviness. And we brought up, of course, you know, Johnny Cash doing the Soundgarden song, Rusty Cage, and doing Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, and everybody having respect for Johnny Cash, these heavier musicians. So it just, it's super. And you know music guys, musicians, it's probably not too big of a surprise. It could be video game nerds, and we're putting a good positive spin on that. I don't know what else to say, man. It was just fantastic.
That Disney thing we talked about, his song he wrote, Cruising for Bruising, from Teen Beach Movie, that I, you heard, have very personal experience with, but that's his biggest selling like song and
platinum
record that he was platinum on. And even, yeah, platinum. He was on the Queen of the Damned soundtrack, which was platinum, the Punisher soundtrack, which was gold. Like, what we didn't get into, he had a song that was featured on the True Blood TV series about vampires that used to run on HBO too. And that's in my notes that we'll have to talk about next time. So, I mean, great rock music, great soundtrack stuff, voice acting, video games, dudes at conventions for all these things. I don't think he was joking. He wasn't joking when he told us that he was too busy doing other things on his days off from touring.
Yeah. And, now I'm going to be on a YouTube search, you know, looking for that first episode of the Osbournes as well.
I'm totally going to go look for that first episode of the Osmonds. And if you haven't checked out that Gamer Girl Country Boy music video on YouTube, it's really funny. It's with Felicia Day when she was doing that Guild TV series. It's a perfect mesh of country dude and the gaming community and how they can all be friends and date. And it's a very well done, funny video. And it has a cameo from one of the guys from Mythbusters in it, from Grant Inahara, I think his name is, from, if you remember the Mythbusters TV show. Mm-hmm.
And if there's ever a horror movie where snakes on a plane flies through Sharknado, we're going to expect Jason Charles Miller to do the music for that.
Yeah, he's acted in sci-fi movies, Brian.
And we're going to leave that thought in your head, snakes on a plane flying through Sharknado. Always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time. Wasn't love, and I know it wasn't money.
tails are right or wrong. So I looked into the water. Yeah, I looked down deep. And the darkness looked back and said, your soul is mine to keep.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.